All right.
Tonight's session I'd like to devote to the politics within tefillah. You say to me that that's a total impossibility. Well, I'll try to prove it to you that indeed politics had its effect on tefillah. I'll give you some examples right off the bat. I hope to be able to get down all six. I probably will. Let's take it from the most contemporary political tefillah that exists. Do we or don't we say Hallel on Yom HaAtzmaut, on Israeli Independence Day, and on Yom Yerushalayim?
Without a bracha.
With or without a bracha is subsumed under the political party to which you are identified. All
right? Right. Mizrahi.
Well, we'll see. Even some Mizrahi people say you shouldn't say it with a bracha.
But
my concern is less halacha than politics. Together with that is, without question, the last page of the Birnbaum Siddur, page 789, Tefillah L'Shalom Medinat Yisrael. Do we say that tefillah for the welfare of the state of Israel? There are three words which are politically loaded in there. Item number two. There is a tefillah which we at Yom Yisrael do not say that has been said for generations and probably centuries. It is the tefillah for the welfare of the government and the state. I want to show you a political statement that is wrapped in there that you don't begin to realize, neither in its original nor in its translation. And it is probably one of the two reasons that I personally have no desire or need to say that tefillah at Yom Yisrael. I'd love to see it out of the matzah entirely, notwithstanding the fact that there is good basis for it. Third, I'll have to give you a little historical note about the best documented Jew since the days of Avraham Avinu. The one who has had more written about him and the one that we know more about from biographies is a man by the name of Shabtai Tzvi, who lived in the middle 1600s and who declared himself Mashiach and almost bamboozled the entire Jewish world on three continents to subscribe to his doctrines of messianism and declare him the Mashiach. He insisted, his public relations agent actually, Nathan from the city of Gaza, from Aza, Nathan Azati, who was a brilliant executive director for Shabtai Tzvi, insisted that a tefillah be recited Yishalom HaMashiach every single Shabbos. And if God forbid you didn't say Amen, or you didn't say that tefillah, I will try to read for you what the effect was. When Hasidim and Misnagdim, a century later, after Shabtai Tzvi, started to go at one another, just about the time of the American Revolution, a tefillah that was politically loaded was one that went like this. Hineni muchan umezuman. Hineni muchan umezuman. We sing it today, right?
Sure.
They used to kill themselves. You were marked for life as a chassid or a misnagid if you said those words. Finally, I'm going to take you into the matzah. And some of you who have been here for years have heard this, but maybe you need a little chazorishi, or maybe you need a little review. The political statement of all that we read on Yom Kippur and on Tisha B'Av, the Asara Harugei Malchus, the 10 martyrs. You frown. You want to see where the politics is. Well, you may have problems. Maybe my definition of politics is not your definition of politics. We'll see. If you give me a broad definition of politics in all of its bestiality and all of its baseness, then I think you will see that there is politics and prayer that we have to take a look at. I don't ask you at all to agree with me. I'm just asking you to listen and let it sit. And who knows? Maybe in a month or two or three or a year from now, you'll appreciate what's going on. I'm going to reverse the order. Let's really go to the matzah, so that we can get the matzah out of our way quickly. Let's go the asara arugimah, because I'm going to work from the bottom up. Take the matzah and open up kindly to page 837. Briefly, you know the story of the 10 martyrs, the Asara Rugei Malchus. Although the poem seems to lead us to think that 10 Tanoim were marched out one by one and killed, martyred, tortured to death, indeed it's not so. In the year 135, the Roman Emperor Hadrian went out on a mass campaign to kill the entire spiritual base of Israel, because that spiritual base, Rabbi Akiva and others, were indeed the political party that objected to paying total submission to Rome. There was a price that Rome was going to pay if they wanted it quiet, and Rome wasn't ready to be told what to do. Hadrian was a bloody warrior only when someone stood in his way. Otherwise, he really wanted peace. But Rabbi Akiva told him where to go and how to get there, and so did the others. And so he paid back in kind. It was a period of time. It wasn't one instance. Before we touch the text, I have to give you two bits of introductory information. The first bit of introductory information goes back to the original Mechiras Yosef, the sale of Yosef, where you know that the brothers sold him down the river because they simply did not like his authority over them. And the Medrash indicates that they sold him for a pair of shoes. They needed a pair of shoes, and they were ready to sell him as a utilitarian trade, as a bartering. They were ready to trade off their brother for a pair of shoes. Whether they extracted more is irrelevant at this point. Now I've got to switch from Yosef of biblical times all the way down to the end of the Chashmonoim of Hanukkah. The dynasty established by Matisyahu and his sons lasted some, I don't know, let's say between 100 and 200 years. There's controversy as far as that is concerned. But don't be concerned with the amount of time. In terms of history, it's meaningless. At the end of the dynasty, Pompey, the famous Pompey, went on a military expedition from Rome, which is in Europe, to Damascus, the Damascus of today in Syria. So how far was he from Yerushalayim? If you're in Damascus already, and the roads look good, so in a couple of days you can be in Yerushalayim. The end of the dynasty saw two brothers vying for political supremacy. Aristobulus was one, and Yochanan Hyrcanus was the other. Their mother, the queen, had insisted on one being her successor, and he was the younger. The older one felt that, I'm on line first. I deserve, and I could be a better king than my brother. When Pompey arrived in Damascus, 75 miles away from Jerusalem, Aristobulus sent a delegation of foreign ministers to Pompey, and he said, "Pompey, we will pay taxes to you if you support us, Aristobulus and his men, against all the other parties." Pompey listened to them, and he said, "Don't worry. Go home and tell Aristobulus that I will support him." Hearing this, Yochanan Hyrcanus, the brother, said, "Hey, you guys, get up there to Damascus. You got to talk to Pompey and tell him 1, 2, 3, 4. He's got to support me." Pompey listens, and he says to them, "Gentlemen, worry not. Go home and tell Yochanan Hyrcanus that he has my support." The second delegation comes back, and the Gemara tells us that the Sanhedrin, the Rabbonim, heard that the two brothers sent to Pompey. They sent a delegation from the Sanhedrin, and that delegation, the third one, said, "Listen, Pompey, you see there are two brothers. They are not politically stable. They're killing one another. We are the spiritual guides of the nation. Support us, and we will make sure that you will have what you need as long as you give us what we need. Go home, Rabbonim, and tell the people that I will support you." Nope. All three delegations come home, and each one starts his political campaign, the primaries, to be able to be elected and accepted as the leader of Bnei Israel, the next in the Hashmonean dynasty. Pompey finishes in Damascus and slowly starts his march south towards Jerusalem. Needless to say, on the way he was attacked by several bands. Sometimes it was Yochanan's people, sometimes it was Aristobulus' people, and he finally arrives in Jerusalem. The Gemara says that a pig grabbed a hold with its nails of the walls of Jerusalem. And when the pig grabbed a hold of the wall, Eretz Yisrael shook on a Richter scale of 1 to 10, it shook at 400. Okay? I'm not telling you the whole Gemara, it's in Gittin, I learn it constantly when it comes to Tisha B'Av. Why did it shake to 400? Simple. Pompey walked into Yerushalayim and told Aristobulus and his men, "You are now my servants." And then he turned around and he told Yochanan Hyrcanus and his men, "You will now pay taxes to me." And he told the rabbis in the Sanhedrin, "You are now going to decide my policies." And he took them all and captivated them all. This was the basic reason, or better still, this was the first moment that Rome had total dominion over Eretz Yisrael. Beis HaMikdash was still standing. And Rome put its ugly claws, as symbolized by the pig, into the walls of Yerushalayim because of these three political parties who decided that they were going to edge out the other ones. You know what the end of the Roman rule was? Hadrian, Asara Harugei Malchus. When they started to buck Rome, so, and Rabbi Akiva with his revolution, so Hadrian paid back. He killed them all out. Now watch. Turn to page 837. Eile Eskira. These are the martyrs which I shall remember. There are 10, but they are no holier than anyone's. V'nafshi alai eshbecha, and my soul will pour out with sorrow. Ki bela unuzeidim zorim ki ugo beli afucha, because evil men devoured us as eagerly as could be. Bimei hasar, for in the days of that tyrant was Hadrian, the emperor Hadrian. Lo osa arucha, there was no way to buy ourselves, to extricate ourselves, to reprieve ourselves out of his hands. La asara harugei malchus, to save these 10 martyrs who were put together, who were put to death by the Roman government. 839. And the poem starts as follows. Belongdo sefer mipi mishulei aremas, having learned from the sages how to interpret the Torah from the Greek, the Romans were able to read the Greek translation of the Torah, the Targum HaShivim. Ve'hevin ve'digdeit bedos v'shumas. This tyrant understood the diktat. Diktat means grammar. He understood the technicalities, the dos rishumas of our dos, of our religion, as was written in the Torah. Upasach, he opened up to the Ela Mishpatim. These laws, the choshav mezimas, and in his mind there was only evil. He read the following pasuk in Parshas Mishpatim in Shmos. V'gonev ishu mecharo, if you steal a human being and sell him, v'nimtza biyado, and you get caught with it, mos yumos, you are put to death. Govar lev bigdolim, he arrogantly went to the great ones. V'tziva lemalaos plotero nilolim, and he commanded that his palace be filled with a whole bunch of shoes. The Korala Asara Chachamim Gedolim then calls upon 10 Tanoim, 10 great Chachamim, Mvinei Das, who understood our religion, Ute Omer, its reason, Bipilpulim, with pilpul, with deep understanding. And he says to them, Dinu Mishpat Zela Ashuro. Listen, you geniuses, I want you to give me a Psak Halacha, I want you to give a Din. Tell me what the din is in the following case. Ve'al te'avisuhu b'chazov la'amro, and don't you dare distort and lie to me. I want to know what the truth is. Ki im hotzi uhu la'amito ula'oro, you better make sure that you enlighten me with the truth. I ask you a shayla. Ki im hotzi ishko neiv nefesh me'achov b'nei Yisrael. If a person will kidnap one of his brethren from Bnei Israel, the Amer Bohm will turn his back on him, Umecharo, and will sell him down the river. What's the din? Up until now, who do you think Hadrian is talking about? Joseph. Up until now, it's Joseph. The symbolism with the shoes. Although he doesn't quote the pasuk, he certainly gives you the circumstance. A brother in Israel was kidnapped and sold down the river. It could be Joseph. Hein ke'onulo, they were just ready to answer him, umeis ha'gonav ha'hu, that the ganav has to be put to death. No ma yeya bo sechem asher achichem mechoruhu lo achas yishme elim sechoruhu. Then he yelled out, where are your fathers who sold your brother to a caravan of Yishmaelites, ube'adne alayim nisanuhu, and for a pair of shoes you bartered him? What should they have answered right then and now? Where are our forefathers who sold Yosef down the river and bartered him for shoes? You know where they are? 210 years in Mitzrayim. 86 years they suffered not only servitude, but shklafarai, concentration camps. The children were killed. The men were killed. Families were broken up. Egypt was built on Jewish blood. We paid midah keneged midah. We paid quid pro quo. Huh? So what?
They don't do it that way.
Who told you?
Usually. I mean, if I go over and do something, I deserve.
The sins of our collective generation will be foisted upon the shoulders of the collective generation, the next. Okay? Individually, you stand alone as far as your child is concerned. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not going to blame your child for what you do. But this generation will affect the next generation if we pull some crazy shit. Simple. That was their answer. Look at the skip a paragraph. Zman tno lanu shloshes yamin. Give us 3 days to answer you. Ad sheneida, until we know, im nigzal hadavar mimeromim, if this is what God has judged from heaven. Im onu chayavim v'ashemim, if we are guilty, Nisbol b'gzeras malei rachamim. We will suffer that guilt, and whatever sins we have to atone for, we will suffer nisbol. We'll carry b'gzeras malei rachamim at the command of kel malei rachamim, God who is full of compassion. Go back a paragraph. Says Hadrian, Vaten kablu din shamayim alechem. You better accept heavenly judgment upon you. Ki mimeyavo sechem lo nimsakachem. From the days of your forefathers, there's never been a bunch like you. V'im hayu b'chayim, if they, your forefathers, Yosef's brothers, were alive, hayisidonam nifnechem, I would come and take and judge them right before you. But they're not alive. Vaten tisu avonu vosechem. You are going to carry the sin, that is the punishment for the sin that your forefathers committed. Why didn't they answer him? We already went through it. Vosinstafanuns. Do you understand my question? It's critical. We paid with 86 years of Mitzrayim. And we got out after 86 years. We were almost wrecked. We went down 49 Sha'arei Tuma, the ladder down to the abyss had 50 steps. We went down 49. We fell to the bottom of the barrel and we almost went through. I maintain, people, that this has absolutely nothing to do with Mechiras Yosef. He used Hadrian, and the poet, the python uses it. Hadrian used Mechiras Yosef as a pretext. And he used shoes, nothing more, as a symbolic pretext. When we read this situation and we think of the Asar Aruge Malchus, what has to come to mind on Yom Kippur and on Tisha B'Av is the politics that led us to Rome being in Israel. And that politics occurred a century before, in the days of Pompey. When Aristobulus was ready to sell out his own brother Yochanan Hyrcanus, he went to Pompey and said, I'll give it to you. I'll give you whatever you want. Just support me against my brother. Yochanan Hyrcanus comes and he says the same thing. I'll pay obeisance to you and I'll pay taxes to you. You'll have me in the palm of your hand. Just support me against my brother. And when the Rabbonim and the Sanhedrin came also, the Tzaddikim of the door came, and they used the same language to this guy. What did this guy understand other than politics? That was it. This is what we are talking about, the Churban Bais HaMikdash having been for Sinas Chinam. The politics of Sinas Chinam is something that you can never forget. And on Tisha B'Av, as well as Yom Kippur, you lament over that politics. If anyone interprets this poetic portion, this bit of piyut, to mean Yosef and Mitzrayim, you're off course, I believe. And you know the Chofetz Chaim's famous statement. The Gemara in Yerushalmi says, any generation that doesn't see the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash is as culpable, is held responsible in God's eyes as if it destroyed it. What do you want from me? I didn't destroy the Beis HaMikdash. What do you want from me, God? So Chofetz Chaim says that if you understand what destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, which was this measure of sinas chinam, this unbridled hate that one Jew had for another, given the political context, and you understand the only thing that you can do to get rid of that sinas chinam is ahavas chinam, is the complete reversal. And if we don't have Mashiach in a Beis HaMikdash, it's because we haven't practiced that ahavas chinam yet. Simple as that. Come Yom Kippur, that's what you have to do tshuva for. The tshuva process on Yom Kippur, when you say the Asar Aruge Malchus, is Alchei Chechotonu Lefonecho B'Sinas Chinam. Alchei Chechotonu Lefonecho B'Sinas Achim. The hate of brothers, ready to sell one brother down the drain. Absolutely incredible. Unfortunately, most people are zan by the time you get to Eila Eskira on Yom Kippur Day, and they're not around to understand that this is a prayer with its political essence at the core. And if you don't hear that political essence, you don't understand the Asar Aruge Malchus.
don't they hold it at a different time than when people are more...
I'll consider it also.
By this time,
sure.
I'm already home sleeping.
That's correct. Nope. That's why you're sitting here, to get a head start. It's as simple as that. You see, I hear what you're saying. I really hear what you're saying. We'll need a break, you know. You'll need a break. You're entirely correct. But that's the way it is. And if, I'll tell you clearly, if before you go on Yom Kippur, I understand you have to go, there are no two ways about it. Not everyone is as fortunate as me to have to stand the whole day and work. You have to stand the whole day and work in your office, in your shop, and you don't worry about Yom Kippur. Yeah, I get through it with a breeze. No big deal, because I'm working all day. What can I do? But before you go, maybe you ought to remember and jot down over there in your Yom Kippur notes that you turn to page 837 and say it. And with an introductory passage, and then at the end you have a postscript on page 845. And from there, from the Asara Arugei Malchus, just a few pages later, you go right into 849, which is the Yashamnu and the Alchei, which is the Vidui. The Vidui has got to include a Vidui for the politics of this prayer. You cannot leave it out. And if you do, you don't begin to understand why it's there. You see, because Yom Kippur is not a day of Avelis. Yom Kippur has no mourning associated with it. And probably no sadness either. But Yom Kippur is a day of remorse, of turning over, flipping over a new page, and you know, a clean page. If that's the case, it belongs in here. The remorse for having understood that lesson, which is clearly documented in Gittin Daf Nun Vav, has got to come to the fore in Yom Kippur. Otherwise, there's no reason for a Tisha B'Av Tefillah to be in Yom Kippur. There's no sadness on Yom Kippur. There's rededication, there is atonement, but not sadness. Except for one thing. That's when there has to be vidui for politics, a confession for politics. Put the matzah away and let's get... Yeah.
Is the story of Bar Kamsa and Bar Kamsa within this context?
Well, probably. That's the whole milieu. In the Gemara, it's on the same page. Gittin Nun Vav, it's there. You see, it's the same thing.
That happened.
It's the same. Yeah. I can't tell you when Bar Kamsa and Kamsa happened. I cannot tell you. But it's that, you know, we're talking about that generation.
I don't know the tenth day.
Why number 10, Irving? I can give you answers. I hate to be original, so I may be wrong here, but I'm taking an educated stab. Rather, it's an instinctive kind of a stab that I'm taking at it. If the Paitum, the author, the poet who wrote this, uses Yosef as a mushal, as a symbolic pretext. You remember that 10 brothers were involved in selling Yosef down the drain. One brother, Binyamin, was at home, right? Yosef is another brother. So there were 10 left out there. Number one. If you don't like that, I'll give you another answer. The poet who wrote the Asara Arugei Malchus based his poetic story on a Medrash. And the Medrash talks about those 10. And it doesn't talk about 9 or 11. There were hundreds and thousands who were killed by the Romans in Hadrian's oppression from 132 to 135. Actually 134, 135. Hundreds and thousands. These were among the 10. They are among the first 10, the chief 10. All right? Let's go further. Open up to page 379. The Tfilah Lishlom HaMemshala. You look at it, Hanosein Chual HaMelochim, at the bottom of the page, he who grants victory to kings, Memshalon and Nesichim, and gives dominion to princes, Malchuso Malchus Kol Olamim, his kingdom, God's kingdom, is a kingdom of all ages. Hapotzez David Avdo Mecherev Ro, he who delivered David from an evil sword, Hanosein Bayom Derech, he who split away in a road in the sea, and amongst mighty waters he created a path. These are all poetic ways of talking about God. Hu yivarech v'yishmor, may he bless and protect and help them and exalt the emperor Nikolai and his princess Katarina, the president and the vice president and all the officers of this country, etc., etc., and so forth. What can I shlach? I mean, what could be so bad about this? Beautiful. Especially when in Pirkei Avos we learn, having mispanel bishlomo shel malchus, you must go ahead and pray for the welfare of the state. You know why? Because if there wouldn't be a state, ish esreyeu chayim b'lo'o, one human being would be a cannibal and eat up his neighbor. We would consume one another overnight. So at least when there is a ruling dominion over us, there's the fear that if I will do you in, that I'll have to worry about the electric chair. At least it'll make me civil. So it's a Mishnah. Why do I despise it so? Huh? What? Oh, no. What he is saying over here is further. That the tefillah, hanosein chual hamelochim, the tefillah is based already, the idea is based on something which appears in Yirmiyahu. Yirmiyahu, Jeremiah was a prophet who saw the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash. They were exiled out to Bavel, out to Iraq, and the people did not know what to do. Jews didn't know what to do. Most of them were ready to give up living. Davening, they couldn't daven. How could you daven in Bavel? Keep Shabbos? How can you keep Shabbos in Bavel? Is that a Shabbos? So Yirmiyahu told them in Perek Chavtes, at the behest of God, listen to me carefully. The new batim v'sheva, you'll build houses and you'll sit in them. And once you have a house, need to uganos, you'll plant a little garden in the back. Tomatoes in tomato season, and vegetable season, and flowers in flower season, and you'll make sure that the grass is cut on the lawn. And chunashim, you'll go ahead and you'll get married. For holy the banim, and you'll have families, and the families will have families' families. And then, Dirshu es Shlom Ha'ir, I want you to pray for the welfare of the city, Asher Higlesias Hem Shoma, to which I exiled you. V'hispalelu ba'ado al Hashem, and pray for its welfare to God, Ki b'shloma yihyeh lachem shloma. If it'll be peaceful in Iraq, you'll sit in peace here in Bavel. And 70 years will pass, then you'll go back. But you're not going to give up. 70 years, you'll live as normal in existence as is humanly possible. Understand? So already Yirmiyahu speaks about it. There are no two ways about it. There's only one problem. You know the rule that genuine tefillah, genuine prayer in its proper style, is always quoted from Tanakh. You take Torah, Nevi'im, Ketuvim, and you've got to find the Makor. I started to look at the Makor, at the origin of this tefillah in the Siddur. Hanosein chual hamelochim. Okay? And I just want to read to you a little before and a little after, and then tell me what it says. First three words, Hanosein Chual HaMelochim, if you want to follow me in the Tanakh, I have it here, you can take it, comes from Tehillim Kuf Mem Dalet, Tehillim 143. And I want to give it to you in English straight away. Kuf Mem Dalet. 144. Sorry, I said 143. I meant Kuf Mem Dalet, which is 144. Pasuk Yud and Pasuk Yud Aleph. Got it? Listen to what it says in English. Don't work too hard. O God, who gave victory to kings and deliverance to your servant David, rescue me from this cruel sword. Snatch me from the power of my foreign foes, whose every word is false and their oaths are perjury. That's a complimentary pasuk. What does it say there? What does that pasuk say? God save the king. Sollst haget werden. God bless the queen. May she die the most treacherous way. Look at what the pasuk says. They are using parts of psukim. Now you can say, if this is the only one, okay, I have two more. Look at the context of the pasuk. Gevald, I don't know that you ever want to be identified with such a thing. This was a valve that was put in to satisfy two tensions and two pressures that were brought to bear on Bnei Yisrael throughout Golus. Number one was the tension and the pressure of oppression. These kings and princes were all anti-Semites without exception, and they demanded that they be blessed. And on the other hand, you have the problem of Yirmiyahu, the tradition in Yirmiyahu, Yisfala b'shlomo shel malchus. Yirmiyahu was told Bnei Yisrael that you've got to pray for the welfare of a Franklin Delano Roosevelt. So let the haggid werden. Amashiach. You devil, you skunk, you scoundrel. And so on down the line. And France with the Gauls. And Canada was no tzaddik in the Second World War. None of them was. They were all the same Hitlers. Now, you can say to me, hey, that's only one puzzle. Good, so let's take another one. Let's take another one.
What's the difference, what they are?
What do you mean, what's the difference?
It's kind of, but still, we want, we're living here, we want to have peace.
Agreed! Agreed! I'm only showing you the source.
They're bombed.
I want, look, you know we do certain things subconsciously. I'm telling you that this tefillah was put together and it wasn't subconscious. It was very clearly spoken. It was allegorical. And they could have chosen words from other psukim, from a different context. Hashanos ein chu al ha-melochim. I don't know, I can't give you an example now. I didn't do that work. Maybe over the summer. I'll have nothing to do. I'll give you an example. I'll rewrite it. And each time I will show you the context does not have this connotation. And you're going to say the same words. Yeah, give me some time to play around in Tanakh. But I have more. Go on. Do you see the second Anosein Bayom Derech in the Siddur? The third line. Whom forges a pathway in the sea. Ubemayim Azim Nesiva. And among raging waters, he will create a road. I mean, what could be so terrible over there? No, go to Yeshayahu Mem Gimel. Yeshayahu, the 43rd chapter. Yeshayahu Mem Gimel. And it's Pasuk Tet Zayin. Kol Amar Hashem. This is what the Lord says. Which Lord? The Lord who opens a path in the sea and a path through mighty waters, who drew on chariots and horses to their destruction. In other words, Yamsuf, no question about it. A whole army, men of valor, there they lay, never to rise again. They were crushed, snuffed out like a wick. Cease to dwell, don't forget about days gone by, and don't brood over past history. Here and now I will do a new thing. This moment it will break out like a bud. Can you see it? Do you understand? I will make a way through the wilderness and paths in the barren desert, and wild beasts will honor me, and the wolf and the ostrich, for I will provide water in the wilderness and rivers even in a barren desert where my chosen people may drink. I have formed this people, Amzu Yatzarti Li, Tehilosi Yisaperu, for myself, and they will proclaim my praises. What's Yirmiyahu saying here? What's Yishayahu saying here? I'll take all of them like I did at Yam Suf, all your Russian princes and your Polish noblemen and your Ukrainians and your Germans and your Frenchmen, and I will do the same thing that I did to Susvarocho Ramavayom. They're all Paro Melech Mitzrayim. What did Paro Melech Mitzrayim do? He came to the Jews and he said, hey guys, let's cooperate in an economic venture. I've got to build a city. You've got manpower. Let's get to work. And from there, Havon Yitzchak Malo, this sophisticated relationship developed. And all of a sudden, the sophisticated relationship, when something went wrong, whose fault was it? It was the Jews' fault. The Khmelnytsky massacres in Ukraine were nothing more than the fights between the Polish noblemen and the Ukrainian middlemen. And the Jews were talking in the middle. Poland and the Ukraine were fighting over land and territory rights, and the Jew gets it. I, the Jew, was brought to the Ukraine to do what? To develop the land, to settle the land, to work the land, and they were good managers. What do you want from me? And they were constantly in the middle. Comes Yishayahu and says, everything that happened in Paro Melech Mitzrayim's time is going to happen again, and I will take you and crush you like I crushed Mitzrayim. That is what is implied in Hanosein Bayom Derech Ubamayim Azim Nesiva. If anyone deserved a thank you, it was the Jew in Egypt who built the pyramids. What did we get? Some thank you we got. You know what you're going to get? You'll get the same that Paro Melech Mitzrayim got. You'll drown in your own sea. Now again, I can think of 10 references, Mike, that can speak about, you know, Kriyas Yamsu. Vayosha Hashem Bayom Ahuas Yisrael Miyad Mitzrayim. But it doesn't have a context and a connotation of what happened then is going to happen to you also. There isn't a juxtaposition of you guys and us, B'nai Yisrael. Take the third one. It's the next to the last line in the Siddur. B'yameihem u'b'yameinu tivasha Yehuda. In their days, in other words, in Roosevelt's days, and Eleanor Roosevelt, and Cordell Hull, and all the chevra, in their days, ubi yomenu, and speedily in our days, tivasha Yehuda, may Judah be saved, Yeshua, the Yisrael Yishkon Levetach, so that Israel will be able to live in security, uvalu tzion goel, and let to Zion come the Mashiach, the Redeemer. Take a look at Jeremiah Chof Gimel, Yirmiyahu 23. Yirmiyahu 23, let's see what it says there. Pasuk Hei, Vav Zayin Ches. The days are now coming, says the Lord, when I will make a righteous branch spring from David's tree, a king, a Mashiach, who will rule wisely, maintaining law and justice in the land. In his days, Judah shall be kept safe, and Israel shall live undisturbed. In his days, not in your days, Katarinislav, Russia, Poland, in his days in Mashiach. This is the name to be given to him. The Lord is our righteousness. Pasuk Zion, therefore the days are coming, says the Lord, when men shall no longer swear by the Lord who brought Israel out of Egypt, but they will swear by the Lord who brought the descendants of the Israelites back from the northern lands and from all the lands to which they had been dispersed to live again on their own soil. Okay? You know what's going to happen. You'll lig in dreh. You'll be down and we'll be up. The Biyameinu Tivasha Yehuda says, in two words, nations of the land, based on this context, Yirmiyahu, I have two words for you. Drop dead. Thank you for all your favors, but no thanks. Now, you may say that I am crazy. What? No. No. This tefillah was originated in Golos. Do they say for the government in Israel? Page 789. What do we say? At the end of davening, the tefillah l'shlom medinat Yisrael. And let me tell you something, if you do the same analysis on tefillah l'shlom medinat Yisrael on 789, in no way will you find this context. Now, one in particular who has ridden me very hard, has been extraordinarily critical, is Myron, that we don't say it, Myron Itell. And I said to him, look at the context. He's got a good answer, there's no question about it. But Yirmiyahu said that you should do it. Good. I'll do it. Not this, I know Saint Joel Amalachim. This tefillah has been so constructed as to be probably one of the biggest political satirical statements that we have. It is all political satire. But go. Now, tell me I'm crazy, I'll take it from you, then let's move on.
Would you have said it in Russia?
If you were
living there?
Certainly. Pikuach nefesh. Doche kol ha-Torah kula. Why shouldn't I say it? Would I spit in Poland when I said Aleinu? Certainly I would. The least that I could do to release anger. This is no different than the spitting in Aleinu. It is nothing more than a vow. If you disagree, say it. I would like to find other words in other context. Other psukim, what? I don't want that Reagan should get a little sense. All right.
You could say it in English.
That too. But look at the... I mean, look at the absurdity. A nobody, an uneducated nobody, Harry Truman, was the biggest yeshua, that was the biggest friend that we ever had. And the sophisticated cream, the smetana of society, Roosevelt, the Mashiach, was the biggest enemy we ever had. How do you say, you know? I mean, they're all the same. So who's our friend? Nixon? God, I should say Mishaberech for Nixon. I mean, why not? He was great. He was the best. He was the best that we ever had in Israel.
You read about Harry Truman, what his thoughts were about Israel.
Yeah, I know, but I'm not interested. But I'm not interested in what a person thinks. I'm only interested in the bottom line. The bottom line is, if we didn't have Harry Truman, there wouldn't be a state of Israel. Simple.
So then they also say that we say a prayer so that someone worse than what we have shouldn't come.
Okay.
Come
in. I hear what you say. I hear what you say. Dilute Sarah Bashata. It's bad enough. Let it not get any worse. That's the best thing that can ever happen. You want to say I'm crazy? Tell me I'm crazy.
Can you make a statement that this country has been better to Jews than any other country in the history?
Unequivocally. No doubt about it. It's the golden of Medina.
If that's the case, would you want to say a prayer for Shalom HaMedina?
Definitely, but not this. Having discovered this context, I wouldn't say this.
That's what I want.
Oh, unequivocally. I mean, that I could have told you 25 minutes ago.
That wasn't
pretty. No, unequivocally. No way. And I, you know, whether McCarthy is dead or not, I'll say that. I'm not interested. I'm a patriot. I agree wholeheartedly that the American experience was a golden experience. Since the golden age of Spain, we haven't had it as good.
Except for Roosevelt.
But again, you know, I'm not really concerned with Roosevelt or Truman or anyone else. These personalities don't concern me. What concerns me is that when you say tefillah, it is the outpouring of your heart. What is intended here? You don't see it between the lines. It's an optical illusion. Now tell me that I'm crazy. But I'm forced in every tefillah to look back at the original context in the Tanakh. Whether it is Shmona Esrei or Shema, where does it come from? The whole Siddur was expunged, was taken out of the out of Tanakh, with minor exceptions. So I just took a look. I looked for these words in Tanakh, and I found the psukim that were used. It's incredible. It's absolutely incredible to think.
Are there any other prayers for the government that have been composed besides the deployment?
Yes, this is the one that survives. And this has undergone change through the years, there's no question about it. I don't believe that I would want to waste my time in trying to reconstruct all of the different tefillos for the government and see which is the original and which is the oldest and whether this was truly intended in its origin. I don't think there's its utility. I'm talking about it now. It represents the last 200 years of printed Siddurim that we have, maybe a little more. But this is what is meant. It is a slap in the face to every single European government, and Sfardim also have it, something similar. But the Ashkenazic version is the more satirical. Okay? Yeah, probably. Yeah. Reform don't sit and do a job on the Siddur and the Matzah like we do. Okay? And then again, you know, not everyone has such a devious, insane, warped mind as I. Every line of the Siddur, I want to see its origins. I'll sit and read and read, and this is what I came up with. Now, I don't know, in this case, I don't know if anyone, you know, I have an extensive library upstairs, and one wall just on Siddur and Tefillah. I don't know if anyone that has written this. So again, you know, you want to disclaim it? Disclaim it. Anything else that I say, I can give you chapter and verse. There's nothing else original that I have ever thrown at you. And I don't know that this is worthy of publication. So maybe you'll erase the first side of the tape from the middle. Let's go on. Let's go on. Do me a favor and turn to page 637. This is a quick one. It's the Sfiras HaOmer as printed in this Siddur. 637. The first couple of lines on page 637 for Sfiras HaOmer isn't more than about 250 years old, maximum. Hineni muchanim zuman, here I am, ready and prepared, l'kayim mitzvah saseh, to perform this mitzvah, this active mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer, to count the Omer. And I am ready and prepared, k'moshe kosuv b'Torah, because it's written in the Torah, quote, and here's the mitzvah, s'fartam lachem imachar osa shabbos, you shall count for yourself, etc. and so forth, shevach, etc. Most European Siddurim have an additional line at the beginning. It doesn't start with Hineni Muchanim Mizmor. It starts with an Aramaic version. L'shem Yichud Kudush HaBarichu L'shkintei. Irving, you're shaking your head. You recognize it. Huh? He says it all the time. You spend half your lifetime saying it. For everything. It was brought into the Siddur by the Hasidim. And the Hasidim got it from the Kabbalists before. Hasidim are only 200 years old. In 1776, while this country had its own problems, the Jewish world in Europe was fighting its own revolution, the Hasidim against the Mizrahim. The height of the fight was in the 1770s. So Europe was burning, the Jewish Europe was burning, and America was burning also. If you dared in certain circles to have said this, Hineni Muchan Mezuman L'Kayim Mitzvah Saseh Sfiras HaOmer, and you happen to be a shochet, they wouldn't eat from your shchita. Because if you could go ahead and say what the Rambam didn't say, what Rashi didn't say, what the Shulchan Aruch didn't say, what the Vilna Gaon didn't say, then mistame, you can't be their shochet either. What right do you have to start putting in all new incantations over here? A whole new series of lyrics. This was the Hasidim versus the Misnagdim. In our Birnbaum Siddur, not written for a Hasidic crowd, he prints it only twice. Once by Sfiras HaOmer, and 40 pages later on 677, when we use the Lulav and the Esrog. Right before picking up the Lulav and the Esrog on page 677, he again comes up with a Hineni Muchan Mezuman Lakayim Mitzvah Svara Ish et Tzivanu V'Torah. So I am ready and prepared to do this mitzvah which my Creator commanded me. In the Torah, quote, "Lekachtem lachem, take on the first day of Sukkot, a lulav and an esrog and a hadassim and a rabbis." Well, he's got it also by tefillin. I didn't see. Forgive me, then I am wrong. Okay, I'm wrong. And in sixes also? Good. Then I say that these are the four times. He doesn't have it any other time.
I noticed in the Haggadah, every time you do something in the Seder.
In your some Haggadahs. Some Haggadahs of the Hasidic influence, of the Hasidic text. The Nodav Yehuda, Rabbi Yecheskel Landau, who was one of the champion anti-Hasidic Rabbonim, writes as follows. Someone asked him to interpret the meaning for them of this L'shem Yichud. What are the kavonot, what intent do you say it? Do you say this L'shem Yichud with? So he answers as a tshuva, and it's printed in his sefer, L'da'ati zohi ra'acholi b'doreinu. This is the worst sickness of our generation. You hear? Alluding to the politics of what? Misnagdim and Hasidim. Bechol mokom sheyesh brocha, said this misnagim. And he is, believe me, he is in a league with a Rabbi Akiva and a Vilagon and a Rambam and a Rashi and the Balei Tosfos, all of them. He is of the greatest minds of the 1700s. Bechol mokom sheyesh brocha, he says, in every place that you have a mitzvah, that you've got to say a brocha, before the doing of the mitzvah, ein sorech b'hachana acheres. You don't need any other preparation but the bracha, because what is the bracha if not a mental orientation to what you're going to do? Baruch atah, you are the source of everything. Hashem Elokeinu, God our master. Melech ha'olam, king of the universe. Asher kiddushanu b'mitzvah, and that's why you commanded us to do this mitzvah. Lishma kol shofar, to listen to the shofar. Leishay basukah, to sit in the sukkah. Whatever it was. And Hasidim came with all their preparations to the preparations. The introduction to the book was bigger than the book itself. L'da'ati zehu ra'acholi b'doreinu. This is the greatest sickness that we have of our generation. And says the Nodav Yehuda, he says, now, there are certain mitzvahs that you don't do a bracha, that you don't say a bracha. So there cannot be any kavona, there cannot be any preparation. For instance, you go over to a pushkin, you put in a nickel. That's a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah the same as any other mitzvah. Do you make a bracha? No. Says the Nodav Yehuda, when it comes to such a bracha, hineni, I say the following. Hineni oseh mitzvah zu v'zu l'kayim mitzvah spori. I am ready to do this mitzvah because God commanded me, and I'll put the nickel in the pushkin. So question, why didn't you, if you're already saying something, why didn't you say the same words as the chassidim? They're already saying for everything. Hineni mukhon v'zu l'kayim mitzvah. No. No way. Would not utter it out of his mouth. In 1776, when the Jewish world burned between chassidim and misnagdim, one of the primary focuses of attention, foci of attention, in this political battle was how you daven and what siddur you use. They used to burn siddurim if they found it and it was the wrong nusach. They took it and they spit on it and threw it in the ashes.
They violated the
mitzvah. What's it? They violated the mitzvah of what? The Ahachta L'Reacha Kamocha? They are not my colleagues. They are not my friends. Oh, well. You see, but there the halacha is when an apikores, when a heretic writes the name of God, it's a mitzvah to burn it. You see, they held it differently. It's incredible. This machlokes that led to blood for well over 150 years. Its focus of attention was the siddur that you used. And Hasidim went ahead, and they know how to not only stab you with the knife, but occasionally turn the knife once it's in you. They abandoned what we have, Nusach Ashkenaz, and they went to Nusach Sfard and Nusach Ari, because this was a holier Nusach, this was more original. Now, believe me that I have no bones to pick with Hasidim. I am only trying to give you a flavor of the history and how it was demonstrated in the siddur and by the use of this siddur. And it went on and on and on.
About today in Israel and when they're writing a chapter, they go from
Yeah, but they're not davening. Okay, politics.